great Kohen David Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. It's an honor and a privilege to address the called out ones of Yahweh. Each and every one of you a special treasure to Yahweh because you strive to live by Yahweh's 613 laws. I'd like to refresh your memory today with Pastor's vision, which occurred in the year 2007, the seventh Roman month on the seventh day. So 777. First of all, a vision, giving you a definition of the word vision, it's something gazed at. This is from the Strong's Dictionary, Greek word 3708. Something gazed at, that is spectacular, especially supernatural or extraordinary. From the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary, definition of vision, it's something seen, especially a supernatural appearance that conveys a revelation. So Pastor had a vision. He said it's the first vision he ever had. And you can read about this vision in the seventh book of Israel, part 1, page 239, and the seventh book of Israel, part 2, page 431, some references. But I'd like to cover that vision in detail here today. And first of all, Proverbs 30, verse 5. It says, every word, and that's what I'd like to focus on, every word that he spoke in that vision, every word, every law and prophecy of Yahweh is pure. He, Yahweh, is a shield of protection to those who put their trust in him. So let's examine every word of Pastor's description of the vision. But first, let's play the video from that day. So we can hear it firsthand from Yahweh's witness. So play the video at this time.
Okay. Today is the 777. 777. 777. That should be something. Somebody tell me if you can. Now, this morning I had the first vision I've ever had that I know of. It was a real vision. And I woke up somewhere between 3 and 4. I think it was closer to 4. And got up for a few minutes. I went back to bed. I wasn't sleepwalking. I was fully awake. But I went back to bed and I was looking out the west window thinking about today's sermon. And all of a sudden, you've seen snowflakes, how they fall slowly and at an angle. From maybe the south to the north or north to the south, but at an angle. Well, it was falling, but it wasn't snow, it was gold. It was gold flakes. It wasn't a dream now. I could see it really, really real, and it was gold flakes falling. And I laid there watching it, and I was amazed, but I don't know what it means. I just don't know what it means. I know gold surely doesn't fall from the sky, so... And I don't think I could have seen it, even if it was, because it was dark. But in the dark, I could see these gold flakes falling. So you come up with a you priests and prophets and whatever, come up with an answer for this. Gold flakes. And it snowed gold flakes for, just a few seconds right in front of my eyes. I could see it just as well as I can see you right now.
Well, praise Yahweh for Pastor's vision. You can now he, about 3 months later, Pastor gave us an interpretation. He gave his interpretation of the vision, and he said, and this is recorded in the seventh book of Israel, part 2, chapter 20, page 181, and this is what he said. He said, and I believe that these gold flakes, the vision I saw, I believe that Yahweh is making you into gold. Praise Yahweh. Yahweh says, I'll purify you like gold. And you know, the city Yahweh Shema, that he said the streets are solid gold, pure as crystal, you can see through it. So that's what Pastor said. He said, I believe Yahweh is making you into fine gold. So now I'd like to start with in reviewing some of the things Pastor said. First of all, the first thing he said was 777. 777, 777. So let's look at that. First of all, you see the nine sevens. He said it the number seven, nine times. So nine, seven times nine is 63. I looked up the Hebrew word 63. It means Abel, Hashatim. The word, you see the first Abel, his name, and the last Abel, you see the name Abel in that word, Abel Hashatim. And it means meadow of the Acacias. Meadow of the Acacias. It comes from word 58, and it means a meadow. And the word Shatim is the meaning of sticks of wood. So now the Acacia, I spoke to one of the great Kahans who was involved when the Ark of the Covenant, which you see in front of the podium here, when the Ark of the Covenant was built. And because in the pattern Yahweh gave us for making the furnishings, he said, make it of acacia wood. And so the great Kahan I spoke to, he related some of the history from that time period when the Ark was constructed. And he said, from our studies back then, Pastor said that the mesquite tree was the closest to all in all characteristics to the acacia tree. The acacia is a family of plants, trees and plants. We had a sample of acacia sent from Israel. Pastor compared the wood and other characteristics and said, that's it. Yahweh has provided what we need right here. Looking at the definition of acacia, it says any of a large genus of leguminous shrubs and trees of warm regions. And the word acacia, it's a noun. You can find it in Africa, in Australia. But notice also, according to the definition here from the Concise Encyclopedia, it says sweet acacia is native to the southwestern U.S. Acacias have distinct, finely divided leaflets, and it goes on to describe the plants. This definition fits the mesquite tree, which grows in this area here at Abilene, and that is what the Ark of the Covenant was built from, the mesquite wood, a type of acacia. Now let's go on to Pastor's vision now, continuing. He says, now this morning I had my first vision I've ever had that I know of. It was a real vision. I woke up somewhere between 3 and 4. I think it was closer to 4, and I got up for a few minutes. I went back to bed. I wasn't sleepwalking. I was fully awake, but I went back to bed, and I was looking out the west window. Well, the significance of him looking out the west window, we know that the two witnesses would take the plan of Yahweh and establish the house of Yahweh in the west. In Zechariah chapter 5 and verse 10, then I said to the Malach who was speaking to me, where are they, the two witnesses, going with the ephah? And he said to me, to build the house of Yahweh according to the standard of perfection sent by Yahweh's laws in a Babylonish land that does not yet exist. And it will be established, and this is a land in the west, here in the chief of the nations. And it will be established at that time when the two witnesses are called out to their work at the established place, the habitation of Yahweh, the house of Yahweh. And if you look on a world globe and you look, you find Haifa, Israel, because you can see Haifa from the hills of Abilene. So if you find Haifa, which is very near Abilene, Israel, and you take the latitude around to Abilene, Texas, you go west to Abilene, Texas, you're going to find the house of Yahweh in Abilene. Okay, now notice also Pastor said here, So the next part of his group of words that he spoke was, he says, he went back to bed thinking about Yahweh's sermon. Thinking about today's sermon, I should say. He said, thinking about today's sermon. So, you know, he didn't go back to sleep. He was thinking about today's sermon. Now, in Yahweh's inspired scriptures, in Psalm 57, verse 8, the last part of it, in the King James Version says, I myself will awake early. The word early means, you know, pre-dawn or dawn, but very early in the morning, which it was. He said it was between 3 and 4 in the morning. So seek Yahweh early seek Yahweh while he may be found. Now, in thinking about today's sermon, a great reference to that is Isaiah 26 and verse 8, which says, Isaiah 26 verse 8, yes, in the way of your judgments, O Yahweh, we have waited for you. Our desire, our longing and delight is in your name and in the remembrance of you. Now notice verse 9 of Isaiah 26. With my soul I have desired you in the night, and he said it was between 3 and 4, closer to 4. Yes, with my spirit within me, I will seek you early. Thinking about the sermon he was going to teach that day, and this was a Sabbath day, this was a Sabbath morning. For when your judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants will learn righteousness here at the house of Yahweh, established at Abilene. So, continuing with the words of his vision, he said, all of a sudden, you've seen snowflakes, how they fall slowly at an angle. And he was describing with his hand gestures snow falling from the south or from the north, from the south. And I thought it was interesting, he said both the south and the north. That he described it as both. So, but in the snowfall that he's describing, this is a very peaceful snowfall. When you have a blizzard, the snow flies in every direction the wind blows, horizontal, whatever direction. But the type of snowfall he's describing here is very peaceful. You know, just and it's very beautiful. I've seen 1,000 snowfalls coming from the north country, and snow falling with a little bit of breeze, very little, is very peaceful as it floats to the earth. So he's describing a very peaceful snowfall. Snow falling, and he says, at an angle. So I'd like to show you some pictures of some snowflakes, because each one of us is created differently. Each one of us is a unique individual, brought together by Yahweh's laws into unity, into one body. So, hopefully you can see these. I'm going to go through these rather quickly, but these are examples of snowflakes. Here's what they call a simple prism. These are what they call simple prisms. Now, each of these snowflakes has a unique beauty to it. Each one is a unique creation, different shapes. Here we have some stellar plates. They call these sectored plates. Then we've got, but notice the beauty, the intricacy of each one of these. This is how we can become a beautiful, intricate creation in keeping the laws of Yahweh. Here we go into stellar dendrites. Then here we have what they call fern-like stellar dendrites. I would just like you to look at the beautiful creations of each one of these snowflakes. And the thing is, they're all different. Different sizes, different shapes, as you can see. But very intricate, very detailed. Here they start into a type they call a hollow column. It's a simpler type of snowflake, but yet it has its own form of beauty. Here they have what they call needles. Now here's an interesting shape called a capped column. Yahweh must have had a lot of fun in creating snowflakes, just as he creates each one of us differently. Here's a group called double plates. Here's a group called Split Plates and Stars. Here's another group called Triangular Crystals. Here's a very detailed and intricate group of snowflakes called 12-sided snowflakes. Here's a section called bullet rosettes. The next page. And then the last group of snowflakes here. You can relate this last group to those who have never heard the word of Yahweh. Those who have yet to be called out. They're called irregular crystals. Okay? And it says the most common snow crystal by far are the irregular crystals. They're small, usually clumped together, and show little symmetry shown in the stellar or columnar crystals, the really beautiful crystals. And then you don't want to be part of this group, the artificial snow. This is just a collection of ice crystals made artificially. So we want to be made in this unique, beautiful group, all different, but yet all beautiful in Yahweh's creation. So that's an indication of the different types of snowflakes that Pastor saw in his dream. So he said, "You've seen snowflakes?" Yes, you have. You've seen snowflakes. All of you seen snow here, even in the Abilene area. How it falls slowly and at an angle. Each snowflake is unique and different. Every snowflake is different. As with people, all different, but all in unity, all coming into unity. This is the unity that Yahweh speaks of in the Pentecost song that we just learned. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, I'd like to cover this difference in us as individuals. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, you look at verse 1, it says, "Now concerning spiritual gifts, brothers, I do not want you to be ignorant. Now there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit, the same Yahweh's Spirit holy, same Spirit. Now there are different types of ministries, but the same Messiah, same high priest over the house of Yahweh, the one and only, high priest Yeshua. Now to each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common advantage." Verse 11, "But all of these are the work of one and the same Spirit, apportioning to each man individually as Yahweh wills." And verse 12, "But just as the body is a unity," coming into unity, but yet as many different members, "and through all its, though all its members are many, they are one body. So it is with Messiah." Verse 13, "For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Yadayim or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit holy." Verse 14, "For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not the hand, am I not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were the eye, what would be the sense of hearing?" So all of us have a purpose. All of us have a job. All of us have a means, a talent to build up the house of Yahweh, whatever our diverse talents are, as our individual personalities are. You know, all having a common, the same moral character as taught by the laws of Yahweh. "But now Yahweh has set members, each one of them, in the body as it pleased him. But now there are many members, but just one body." Just like snowflakes. Snowflakes fall, and they end up being one body of snowfall on the ground, giving protective insulating cover and providing moisture when they melt. Now, let's continue with the next words that Pastor spoke. He said, regarding snowfall, he said, or the gold flakes falling, he said, and maybe the south to the north or the north to the south, but at an angle. Okay, in Luke 13:29, with respect to this north to the south, south to the north, for they, speaking of Yahweh's called out ones, will come from the east and the west and from the north and the south, and will sit down in the kingdom of Yahweh. And notice verse 30, which is, pastor has taught us extensively about verse 30. And behold, there are last, this last, the seventh fruits to Yahweh, the seventh arrow of the house of Yahweh. And there are last, which will be first, and there are first, which will be last. So the seventh arrow of the house of Yahweh will be first, to receive these blessings. In Psalm 107, verse 2, it says, let the redeemed of Yahweh say this, thank you, Yahweh, for you are righteous and your mercy endures forever. May it be so. Hallelujah, Yahweh. Whom you have redeemed from the hands of your enemy. This is Yahweh's protected place here at Abilene. And gather out of the lands from the east and from the west and from the north and from the south. From all directions, we have come to the house of Yahweh. Now, the next part of what Pastor said here, he said, well, it was falling, but it wasn't snow. It was gold. It was gold. These were gold flakes. Okay, so take those simple pictures that you just looked at of snowflakes and turn them in your mind into polished gold. Into polished gold. The beauty of those snowflakes, I thought they were extremely beautiful pictures. Turn those into polished gold and look how beautiful they look. They were gold flakes. It wasn't a dream now, he said. I could see it really, really real, and it was gold flakes falling. Now, there's been some information that's been brought forth on gold and the beauty of it and its properties. Gold is very dense. It's 20 times heavier than water, but yet it can be worked and hammered and just as we are tried and tested. And shape the way Yahweh wants to shape us. So, you know, in a piece of paper, you can stack, first of all, an inch of thinly stacked gold leaf sheets, you could get up to 200,000 sheets in 1 inch thickness, whereas a piece of paper, you get about 500 sheets in a ream of paper, whatever. But anyway, so if you make these flakes out of gold, you can see the beauty of it, and they can be shaped to so that they're very light because of the way they're drawn. And so gold has a property to be molded and shaped. Continuing with Pastor's vision here, he said, and I laid there watching them, and I was amazed, but I don't know what it means. I just don't know what it means. I know gold surely doesn't fall from the sky, and I don't think I could have seen it even if it was, because it was dark. Let's focus on his words there. It was dark. So, in the darkness, seeing the vision in the darkness represents that the world is under darkness at this time. If you look in Acts 26 and verse 15, this is the Apostle Shaul's description of his conversion when Yahshua spoke to him directly, and he said in verse 26:15, who are you, ruler? And he said, I'm Yahshua, whom you persecute, but rise up and stand in your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to make you a minister and a witness, both of these things which you have seen, and of those things which I will yet reveal to you. In verse 17, selecting you to preach and publish the message, or for the Gentiles, it says here. And this last witness, the message will go forth to all the world, to open their eyes, verse 18, to open their eyes and to turn them from darkness to light, and from the power of Satan, which is darkness, to Yahweh, which is light, that they might receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who are sanctified by the faith that is, in unity with Yeshua, in unity with me, it says here. So the darkness represents the darkness of this world. But the light, what's the light? The light is Matthew 24 and verse 14. The message will be preached and published in all the world by the witness. The light is Yochanan Mark 10, or Yochanan Mark 13, 10, which says the message must first be published throughout all nations. And the house of Yahweh is reaching all nations at this time. And in Yochanan Mark 13, 10. So was there any light that Pastor saw as he looked out into the darkness? Physical light, there was the moon phase on that Sabbath morning, the lunar phase on 7 July 2007 is the last quarter, so it's a waning moon. It says the moon is growing smaller, and the fraction of the moon visible was about three quarters of the moon disk. And the illumination was about 52%. So about 52% of the light that's available in the full moon was being seen as Pastor looked out the west window. And even though it was dark, there is some light that the moon gives off. So in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 3, it says, "For when they say, 'Peace, true peace,' then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape. But you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day will overtake you like a thief. You are the children of light and the children of the day. You are not of the night nor of darkness." I'd also like to read Romans chapter 13 and verse 11, which is, I thought, the best scripture that fits what Pastor saw in the darkness. He said, Romans 13, verse 11, "And do this, understand the present time. The hour has come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than we first believed. The night is nearly over," between 3 and close to 4 in the morning. "The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us throw off the works of darkness and put on the armor of Yahweh's light, his laws." I'd like to read 1 Corinthians 3, verse 11. It says, "For no foundation can anyone lay than that which is already laid, Yeshua Messiah, the high priest over the house of Yahweh. And if any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work, our works in building up the house of Yahweh, will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light." When the light comes, when the light, completion of this plan is completed, our works will be brought to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of every man's work. I'd like to read my understanding in going over these scriptures, and in looking at some of the words in Pastor's vision. And I would say to the seventh Malach of Yahweh, and prayerfully these are encouraging words, "The vision which Yahweh gave you of gold flakes falling, which you saw as you lay in your bed, is this. Your vision occurred at Abilene, the peaceful meadow in the west, where the acacia tree provides wood for the construction of the Ark of the Covenant. Your vision occurred at Abilene, where you, O Yisrael, Yahweh's olive tree, pour out the golden oil of Yahweh's laws and Yahweh's plan, preaching and publishing the message of peace to every nation on the earth. The gold flakes you saw are your seed, a body of unique individuals like beautiful snowflakes who have come to the house of Yahweh from the north and from the south and from all directions to receive the golden oil. The gold flakes you saw are your seed being purified like gold to Yahweh following your teachings and example, O Yisroel. Your vision occurred in the darkness of early morning, showing that the darkness of sin is upon the people of this world, but the light of Yahweh's waning moon illuminated the polished gold flakes, falling just as the peaceful solution is providing light to this dying world. Be comforted by the early morning time of your vision, O Yisroel. Know that the night is nearly over, the day is almost here, and that our salvation, which you have labored for, is very near. So may Yahweh bless your understanding. It's an honor and a privilege to introduce our next speaker, the great Kohan Zephaniah. Please stand. Please stand. It's an honor and a privilege to introduce great Kohan Zephaniah Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Please be seated. We have a lot of news today on several stories that are showing the prophecies being fulfilled. And we're going to start with tornadoes in Texas. Now, it says a dozen tornadoes, but it was over 16 tornadoes. And this is 110 miles from here. It's like an hour and 40-minute drive. Six dead, hundreds of homes affected, dozens destroyed, and big hail the size of baseball and even grapefruits. Then we had an IRS scandal, which is, this is a deepening scandal, and who knows where this is going to go. But this in many ways is the protection of Yahweh, because what you're seeing in this scandal is something that the Catholic Church has been up to all the time. This is a tactic of sodomites. And we see this even in the people who come against the house of Yahweh. It's basically the tactic of the Inquisition. And it gets into the fact that the IRS, people in the IRS were targeting people because of their religious and because of their political views. And they were even asking applicants for tax-exempt status about the contents of their prayers, believe it or not, which is utterly outrageous. Meaning they were going to make a decision based on the person's religious belief. There's absolutely no denying that. The man in Congress tells the IRS head, who just resigned because of this, he says, you know what, they can do almost anything they want to anybody they want, anytime they want. You know, you can put anybody out of business that you want, anytime you want. And that's exactly right. And Kohan mentioned the futuristic movies and how they're always floating around in space looking for a planet because the Earth has been destroyed. But another thing that they're always doing in these futuristic movies is they're battling an oppressive government that abuses language and wants to get into everyone's private affairs. And that's exactly because they've always dealt with the followers of the house of Yahweh. And this is exactly their same tactics. If you've been following them at all, they're doing exactly what these same sodomites are doing. They're trying to get into everyone's business and they're trying to abuse government power to destroy the house of Yahweh, which of course they won't succeed. Then Russia is selling advanced anti-ship missiles to Syria. And these are very advanced. These things will go 2,000 miles an hour. They'll fly 100 feet above the ground. They can, and this is on top of the anti-aircraft missiles that they're selling. And also we have Israeli forces, special forces going into Syria. They actually have footage of this yesterday. And then we have Russia is massing off of Syria with the largest post-Cold War deployment outside of the waters of Russia. And the man asked, should we be worried about a multi-state war involving Russia, U.S., Israel, Jordan, Turkey, and Iraq? And the analyst says, yes, there's a very real threat of a regional war coming out of Syria. And as we know, this is exactly what the pastor has been telling us, and this is what the prophecies say. So let's play the news. Everyone, please stand. The great Deacon Tobiah Hawkins!
Shalom, brothers and sisters. You may be seated. Real quick, draw everyone's attention back to this 3 a.m. right here. Everyone sees that, right? Yes? Everyone can see it? Okay. We have the man here praying. We have the faces across the front. 3 a.m. Okay, now, everyone saw that nuclear strike that Israel did on Syria there. They dropped that nuclear weapon, that tactical nuclear weapon on Syria. Now here's the news article right here. And it says, Damascus-based activist Mehmet Al-Shalami said the strike occurred around 3 a.m. Damascus shook. The explosion was very, very strong. So, 3 a.m. Now, this was May the 5th. They dropped that bomb. This picture right here was taken May the 1st by the missile right here. Our missile out here. This is the east part of the 44 here. 3 a.m. So keep these things in mind. These things are not just a coincidence. They don't just show up. And Yahweh points these things out to us for a reason, to prove that his plan is the guiding factor in everything that is taking place in the world. And with this, I'll turn it over to the great Khan Zephania.
Everyone, please stand. The greatest teacher in the world, the great Kohan Israel Hocken!
Shalom, everyone! Okay, Dave Young, come on.
I hope we got that on tape. That was beautiful. You may be seated. I want to show you one more picture. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. When I saw that this morning, when Tovia called me and said we found this time. This picture was taken yesterday evening now after the rocket was complete. And now, this looks like the sun here, but it's not the sun. The sun was going down in the other direction. This is east or northeast. So it wasn't the sun, but it shows a nuclear explosion here and a mushroom cloud. They're going to bring this out clearer later. Also, you can see our missile here that he had in the picture earlier, 3 a.m., but without the Constantine sword on top of it to go out conquering. Well, this is shown again, of course, in Revelations. And the number, now they told me the number of this picture. They looked it up. They looked it up. No, this one here. This one. You see the wagon here and the display, the prop, that same thing that Yahweh inspired Yeshkishka to do just before the destruction came. Well, here it is, and of course the destructive missiles and the news saying Russia says we're going to do this. And the United States says, we'd rather you wouldn't. And they said, who are you shipping these, you know, the rebels don't have ballistic missiles, so who are they going to use these on? Well, of course, it's pretty well known they're going to use them against the United States if the United States goes on with their plans. Russia is also complaining. These pictures, we'll have them in placemats here very soon, Yahweh willing. Now, if you remember where we left off day before yesterday, and with Yeshkishka, and I've got to get through to a certain spot here, so I may have to go over a little since these guys took all my time. The place where we left off was, of course, Yeshkishka 37. And I want you to remember those scriptures about making the display. That was in Yeshkishka 4, 1 through 17. And And of course, it's a little bit strange that that would be inspired again in these last days. And no one even thought about it, and all of a sudden it was there after months of work. Then Yekiska 14 shows, 13 and 14, when sin reaches its peak, we will see food and water shut off. And of course, sin has reached its peak right now. It's all over the world. The troubles that we're having, you see it on every day's news, and I can't, we can't show all the news. We'd be up here all day. But now, if you remember, what we started with to begin with was 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 1, the Spirit perfecting holiness. That was 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 1. The Spirit perfecting holiness. You should remember that. And then after that, if you go over to Genesis 1 and read what Yahweh has in plan in the message that was taught from the beginning, Yahweh says, I will make man in my image and in my likeness, according to my likeness, and they will have authority, according to my likeness, and they will have authority. Well, of course, the authority, this over what? All the creeping things. Now, a lot of other apostles spoke on this. I mean, prophets spoke on this, and they called it different things, but it all amounts to the microorganisms that will obey us. Don't forget Yekiska now, 37:1. This is, let's just turn there and read it. Yekiska 37, because this is the authority that Yahweh is speaking of. This is some of the power that mankind, that you're going to receive. You're the ones that will do this. The first, the last will be first, as Yahweh said. And you are the last. You are the remnant. He speaks of you when he speaks of this right here. In Yekiska 37, verse 1, he says, the hand of Yahweh was upon me. That's going to take several sermons right there, but we'll get it later. And he carried me out in the Spirit, another few sermons, Spirit of Yahweh, and set me down in the midst of the valley, which was full of bones. And he caused me to pass by them all around, and behold, there were many, very many bones in the open valley, and lo, they were very dry. Then he said to me, Son of man, can these bones live? And I answered, O Father Yahweh, you know. Again he said to me, prophesy to these bones, and say to them, O dry bones, hear the word of Yahweh. Dry bones, hear. That's to hear with your ears, dry bones. You're talking to dry bones and say, hear the word of Yahweh. Beautiful, isn't it? Well, of course, you got now, for this, you got Son of Man. Well, the Son of Man, as here in Genesis 1:26, is what he's speaking of, the Son of Man. Son of Man, 1:26. And Yahweh says, I will make man in my image. Now, that means all the sons of men that are born after that, and including this man he was speaking to at this time, are these men. You got to remember that this was not written in chronological order by any means. And it was here a little and there a little, and you've got to put it together. And there was a lot of great teaching going on at the house of Abel, which was the house of Yahweh at that time, by Abel, being taught by Abel, in fact. Well, and then, in fact, you could write that scripture, those scriptures down there in Yekiska 37, if you
maybe circle the Son of Man and just write Genesis 1:26, and this will help you greatly with your studies. And there's several other scriptures throughout the Holy Scriptures that you need to put Genesis 1:26. And then we've covered this before, but get it in your mind in Yochanan 5. And this is, of course, Yahshua speaking. And he's showing that he has received some of that power. And that is the power given him to help him as being high priest over the last day's work, beholding the branch, as prophecy shows that he would. Well, in Yochanan 5, he says, verse 27, and has given him authority to execute judgment also because he is the Son of Man. He's the Son of Man. If Christians could get this in their head, you know, and stop, you know, they're thinking he's half God, half Holy Ghost, half this and half that. You know, they really don't know, but they're interpreting that. But it throws them off from understanding the rest of the scriptures. Every bit of this is given to mankind. He's making mankind in his image. He's not making the gods in his image. He's not gathering fruit from thistle trees. He's not gathering fruit from thorn trees. He's gathering it from his house. He'll have no other work except his house. That's what Amos 3 says. He's only going to fool with one family of the earth. He's only going to deal with that one family, the 12 tribes. And yes, there's other families that came in and were allowed to come in if they would keep the feast, if they would start keeping appointments. But Yahweh showed there wouldn't be many, and that these people would not repent. Neither would the 12 tribes till this time comes when you bring them to Yahweh in these last days, and then they will be flowing to you. You may not believe that, but it's going to take place. But if you look back to verse 24, truly, truly, I say to you, he who hears my words, the teachings pertaining to the laws and the prophets, believing Yahweh who sent me, has everlasting life. It is, this is the road to everlasting life. This is what I want you to do, is understand the full thing here that Yahshua, of course, was speaking of. Now get those two scriptures in your mind. And verse 25 says, truly, truly, I say to you, the hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of Yahweh. Now, remember this day, this is my beloved Son, this day of baptism, have I begotten thee? Have I begotten thee? That's the King James Version. So he became the Son of Yahweh. He's the Son of Man, and now he is the Son of Yahweh at second birth. Unless you're born again, then if you're born again, then you will be the sons of Yahweh. Not of gods, no. No, the gods are going to perish, Yahweh said. All the gods are, every power is going to perish that is not of Yahweh. Son of Yahweh, and those who hear will live. For just as the Father has life in himself, so he has given to the Son to have life in himself. This right here, it carries a real deep meaning that starts in Genesis. Life in himself. Now in verse 27, and has given him authority to execute judgment. Also because he is the Son of Man. He doesn't give that authority to the angels, as they call them, as the King James Version calls them, the heavenly messengers, which are higher than us at this time, but they won't be that way long when you receive your subconscious mind. You know, this is something they want themselves, but they won't go through these trials and prove themselves.
Mankind is doing that. That's the reason Yahweh made you the way he made you, subject to vanity, because you've got to prove to Yahweh that you want this more than anything on earth, more than anything in your life. Praise Yahweh. Now, once you do that, then Yahweh can give you this authority that he's talking about here at this time. Do not be astonished at this, for the hour is coming in which all who hear in the graves will hear his voice, and will come forth those who have practiced righteousness. Now, every translation says the same thing. Those who have practiced righteousness, but they leave that out. They want you to only believe. Only believe what the Pope says is what they want you to believe. Only believe what the Pope says. And you will be saved, they say. You won't. You'll be damned. The Pope himself is damned. And will come forth, notice, will come forth, authority, and will come forth, those who have practiced righteousness will be resurrected in order to live, to receive eternal life. And those who have practiced wickedness will be resurrected in order to be damned, or judgment, be given judgment of Revelations 20. Now, I would beg you again, look, I know a lot of people are here and hearing this, and they're going to look at Mark 3. I want you to go to Mark 3. You're not going to receive this power unless you give it your 100%. In Mark 3 is two things that are plaguing me, making me lose sleep of a night, because I know some are going to fall into these traps. In Mark 3 and verse 33, and he answered and said unto them, saying, who is my mother, or my brothers? When he looked around at those surrounding him and said, behold, my mother and my brothers, for whosoever does the will of Yahweh, the same is my brother and my sister and my mother. And I say to you, be turning over to Matthew 19. I say to you, Yahshua is our pattern. And we're going to have to make ourselves like Yahshua. Train your children to be like Yahshua. Like Yahshua lived when he was here on this earth. The things he did, the things he taught. Train your children to be just like him doing those things. You be like him doing those things. Don't try to train your children one way and say, let's go see some unconverted kinfolks on the other thing. Or let's go to the Six Flags, to the Ferris wheels. Let's go waste some time and some money that could be used in the work. Don't get your mind back on the world. This is what he says. Three out of four will fall away because they're drawn back into this stupidity that the world is filled with at this time. In chapter 19 and verse 17, he says, he said unto him, why do you question me about righteousness? There is one, only one, who is the standard and perfection of righteousness. That one is making us into his image, into his likeness. He drives out all others, as we'll see in just a moment. And that is Yahweh. So if you would enter into life, keep his laws. Keep Yahweh's laws. Look on down to verse 29. And everyone who has forsaken houses, do you get that? Now, everyone who gives this stuff up, brothers, sisters, father or mother, children or lands. Here's a special promise of Yahshua, Messiah, to you. You better get it on your head. You know, he's your judge, as I just got through reading to you. He is your judge.
for my name's sake, for my authority's sake, for my authority's sake, will receive a hundredfold and will inherit every everlasting life. You'll also be able to give your unconverted kin that you want to stay away from right now, totally stay away from right now, lest they make you unclean, put stupidity in your mind, more stupidity than the thought of going to see them even. I hope I don't have to lose any more sleep because of that. Praise Yahweh. Now I want you to go over to Hebrews. There's just a few more things that I've got to get in your mind closely. Let's go to Hebrews 4. Hebrews 3 first, because it leads up to this. We see in, you know, Yahweh turned the trials. He entered the, he put the people after, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I got to get this in your mind. After he was rejected, after they chose sin, which he knew they would choose sin because he made them subject to that, subject to vanity, subject to desiring things that they shouldn't desire. And of course, he says, deal with it, overcome it. You must overcome it. To be a part of my family, you've got to overcome these whims and desires. And then he gives you the peaceful solution in these last days to guide you and show you just how to become like Yahshua himself. If you will just practice it. If you don't practice it, you're not going to be there. And that's a simple fact, and you're wasting your time here with me right now. I won't rap at you anymore. But I want to make it perfectly clear, you can't do these things and stay in Yahweh's house. You just can't be a part of his kingdom. You're going to have to get your mind on his kingdom. His kingdom is so close, you can. It's like the wind. You can just about feel it. Well, here he turned them, he ran them out from the tree of life, from the house of Yahweh, and he even set a flaming sword to keep them out. Now that's what Genesis shows, because they wouldn't do what he said, and they wanted to follow Cain. Well, he said, "Go follow him." Go follow him, and here's what you're going to get in the last day. Missiles. Ballistic missiles. and he writes it in the clouds over the house of Yahweh. 2013. No one could do that but Yahweh. Try writing with the clouds. The Indians tried it, you know, with their smoke signals. Why don't you try it? Try writing in these clouds, or anyone, any of you scientific minded people out there listening to me, try to write something in the cloud. You can't do it. You don't have that power. You could join the house of Yahweh and be given the power over the clouds, yes, and then do what you said very soon. But he says here in chapter 3 of Hebrews that he put the mankind on trial and said, now you're going to have to work and prove that you won't sin, and that you'll turn from all sin, and you'll do my will totally. This is what the great Kohan Shaul brought out just a couple of days ago. If you didn't get that, you need to go back and listen to that sermon. While it is said today, if you would hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. How many got mad at me when I said that? You want to raise your hand and show me? I hope not. Praise Yahweh. Do not harden your hearts as in the provocation. That means where they're actually provoked. Well, that's what mankind is doing to one another right now. You want to step back into that world? He has just showed us, as I showed you from this picture right here, the number of that picture right there actually means peace, joy, and love given to his house. That what we were dealing with, that Yahweh brought all this joy and gladness to us, this feast, was a marvelous thing. You know, we could have had men in here with guns shooting each other, women hitting each other over the heads, pulling your hairs out, taking telephones away from each other. You know, that's what they're doing in the world. But you live together peacefully. You know what a miracle that is? That's not done anywhere in the earth except the house of Yahweh. The days of provocation, that is, provoking to anger, and saying, you've got to overcome this, as he said to Cain. Well, he says here now in verse 16, for some, when they had heard, rebelled, but not all rebel now. Not all rebel, because we had a family that actually brought forth Yahshua out of all that mess, who came out of Egypt through Moshe, but with whom whom was he testing for 40 years? Was it not those who sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness, and to whom did he vow that they would not enter his rest? Enter his rest? What is he speaking of there? Now, enter his rest. That they would not enter his rest, but to those who did not obey. That's the ones he vowed would never enter his rest. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Now, in Hebrews 4, therefore, since a promise of entering his rest remains, let us fear so that none of you should come short of it. For the message was preached unto us as well as to them, but the word which they heard did not benefit them, because they did not share in the faith of those who obeyed the message. However, we who have believed do enter that rest, that is, we're going to enter that rest. And he has said, so I vowed in my wrath, they will, that's a little bit wrong, but anyway, don't get your mind on that. They will not enter my rest, although the works were finished from the foundation of the earth. That is, they were prophesied to be finished. I want you to keep that in mind, entering his rest here now. And Yahweh promises rest. Starting with keeping your appointments, of course. That's the first start of entering into the rest of Yahweh, this entering into the rest. There's two things shown in this. Entering into the rest starts with keeping your appointments with Yahweh, keeping the seventh-day Sabbath. If you turn over to 2 Chronicles here, this gives us a hint of what is spoken of here, and also what is given in Genesis that we will see later. 2 Chronicles 15. 2 Chronicles. Found on page 363. 2 Chronicles 15. Now, this was after they'd been trained. The house of Yahweh was quite some size at that time. And of course, as we just read, not all rebelled against Yahweh, but many of them did. And of course, it was shown. They rose up against Moshe. They started changing the laws of Yahweh. They started leading others to rebel. And of course, this grew. And they made plans to take over the 12 tribes of Israel. They left Israel. This is 2 Chronicles now, not 2 Corinthians. 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 14. Verse 14. Well, they vowed an oath in front of Yahweh with a loud voice, with a shout of joy. Did you hear any of that going on here? Very joyous feast and much shouting. A shout of joy with trumpets. And with ram's horns, all Yada rejoiced over the oath, for they had vowed it with all their heart and mind, and had sought him with all their being. So he was found by them, and Yahweh gave them peace. Now, that should have been translated rest. Yahweh gave them rest. If you'd circle that and route it out to the side, in fact, that's where you'll find it in Strong's, is under rest. And I don't know how that peace got there, but it does include peace. The word does include peace, but it's talking about the same rest that's in the Hebrews, the fourth chapter. He gave them peace, a rest all around. Asa, the king, even removed his grandmother. Wow. But Yahweh, this is my grandmother. Not his, not theirs. This is my grandmother. She's precious. She can destroy your life right now. She can destroy everything you've worked for. Grandmama can do that. She sure can. Children can do it if you let them. Unconverted children, unconverted kin, this is what it's speaking of. And he shows you an example here of how they got this rest, how they were able to actually enter into Yahweh's rest before time and actually live it here as an example on earth. And this took place for about 16 years. They lived in peace, in rest, in joy for about 16 years straight here. Asa the king even removed his grandmother from being queen, mother, because she had made an obscene, an absence of disgusting image of Asherah, that's Ashtar, Astarte, that's Easter. She's celebrating Easter, the same thing that Uriah condemned them for and said, this is the reason you're suffering. You've cut yourselves off from Yahweh. You're not in his rest anymore. And you can't be as long as you keep this up. The sacred pole, which Asa cut down, mashed and burned in the Kidron Valley, verse 17, although he did not completely remove the high places from Israel, Asa's heart, mind was perfect towards Yahweh. He was brought into the house of Yahweh. He also brought into the house of Yahweh those things which his father had dedicated, and also those things which he himself had dedicated, silver, gold, and other articles. Then there was more war. Then there was no war. No war. You see that? Peace. Peace. Rest. Gave them peace from the world. The world won't repent. The world is building rockets and let's be turning over to second Yochanan. The world is building rockets and planes to kill each other, to destroy each other. Prophecy says they're going to. Turn over to page 966. At 2nd, 967, 968, 969. The second Yochanan. The world is building the destructive weapons that started the rockets, the ballistic missiles. I think the great deacon Tovia brought that out, the date of that rocket. I was born in 1934. This rocket, the first one, was in 1932. Yahweh before that says knowledge will be increased. And this is what you're going to do with the knowledge that I've given you, the increase in knowledge. You're going to take this and build war weapons. What if you had the great authority that he has actually promised to his house, his family? You know, you see, what if that was given to the world at this time? Well, they'd destroy the universe with it. All their minds is on is taking advantage of one another, not servitude. Remember, servitude, that's Yahweh's attitude in you. That was great.
One of the ladies, as I was working and listening to the speeches yesterday, and one of the ladies, I think her name was Pearl Fesby, I believe is the way they pronounce it, but she said, you can't see this, but you can certainly see, they're talking about the peaceful solution, you can't see it, but you can certainly see the improvement, and you can see it active in your children once you start teaching this. Well, of course, when you start seeing this, then you know you're on the right track right there. And if you don't ever teach it, of course, you won't see the results of it. Keep that in mind when Yeshua said almost the same thing. He said, you can't see the Spirit. You can't see the Spirit, but you can certainly see the results of it. She said, she quoted it. I don't know if she knew what she was saying there or not, but she certainly said almost the same thing as Yeshua said. You can't see the Spirit. You can't see character, can you? But you can see it displayed in a person's actions. Well, now, this message, this message was taught in the beginning, he said. In the beginning. Well, there's only one beginning for mankind. But it's this message that I'm just bringing you just now. How to have peace and entering this peace and so forth. It was actually given in Genesis. Here in Yochanan, chapter 1, is only one chapter. And in verse 6, he said, and this is love. This is love that we walk after his laws. Those are the laws that, as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in them. I don't believe that. Surely you can't believe that. Let's go back to Genesis now. Genesis, the second chapter. The problem with the religions today, they don't believe the Scriptures. They don't believe anything. They say, well, all the Old Testament was done away with. That Jesus did away with it. No, they got that mixed up. It was Constantine that did away with it. He's the one that chose the God Jesus and Zeus and Christa and said, take this God. He didn't know it was two that he has given them, but he says, you'll worship this one God now. And he gave them two. It shows about, they said that Constantine was one of the historians said he is a complete idiot. he gave them this name and they've really stuck with it, but it was under the threat of death that they started worshiping this. And of course the Catholic Church admits they took the name Yeshua out of the Scriptures and replaced it with these two gods that Constantine gave them. Now that's history, and the history is true. Now here in Genesis now, turn to chapter 2, and notice chapter 9. And out of the ground Yahweh made every tree grow that is pleasant to the sight, something you can really rejoice over. And this is what we saw at this feast. More rejoicing this time than the last feast. And I said the last feast was the best I'd ever seen. But there was more of this feast than ever. It's like Chronicles when they were shouting with joy. Praise Yahweh. Pleasant to the sight and desirable for food, the tree of life. All of these things, desirable for food, pleasant to see, pleasant to live with, servitude, rejoicing as we serve one another. That's the tree of life. The tree of life. Well, now, what does that tell you? If you look back to verse 7, you'll see Abel's teaching. Back to verse 7. Get it now, everybody. Read it for yourself. You see the tree of life. Remember, Yeshua said he doesn't take his children from
trees of thistle, trees of thorns. He said, these are all false teachings, false religions. He said, a righteous tree cannot produce that kind of fruit. An unrighteous tree can't produce this right here. They can't produce the pleasantness. No, they produce war. They don't produce the desirable, although they think this is desirable when they want to steal land, houses, money, people, molest children, seduce women, seduce men. They think this is desirable, but it bites back, and it weakens the mind. It ruins the mind. Their minds are so defiled right now. They think that dropping a bomb, killing families, killing children, you know, that don't even know why they're fighting. Babies. The doctor that they gave a life sentence, that man is not guilty for killing babies. They've told him over and over, this is right, this is okay. The Supreme Court said it's okay. Well, they finally admitted it was murder. You know, that's one thing that they did that they'd been hiding all this time. But they can't produce peace. They can't produce rest. They can't produce anything joyable and endurable. Well, look back to verse 7 now, and you'll see Abel's teaching here in the beginning. And Yahweh formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being, or the King James says, a living soul, I believe. Well, what does that say there? What's he actually saying? You wouldn't know it from what the words is choosing. But anyway, let's just look at the word breath. The word breath. This is Abel's teaching, and the word breath that he breathed into his nostrils. You know, you think of this as, you know, spanking a baby and making him start crying when he's born. That's what's conjured up into your mind when you read this. The word actually means here, according to Strong's Concordance and every other intelligent dictionary that I've seen, it means divine inspiration. Divine inspiration. Then it means intellect. Well, what does intellect mean? It means teaching. It means learning. Well, what are you learning? You're learning here how to be peaceful and kind and loving. This is a love that Yahweh taught, desirable. And it also means, now get this word, because it does mean this, spirit. But you got to know what spirit means. It don't mean Crasper the Friendly Ghost by any means. It doesn't mean a gassy god up there somewhere floating around that came down and supposedly committed fornication with Mary. You know, these are all lies. Spirit. We'll see in just a moment. Well, what Abel was actually teaching here was this breath of life, eternal life. And it was a teaching of how to live eternally. Well, if you'll look the verse 9 again, he says, the tree of life. That's what he was teaching, the tree of life to the people here, teaching knowledge to them. Yahweh planted a garden eastward, meaning first or before. So this garden was planted before mankind was created. This is what he's saying here. But before mankind was created, Yahweh planted a garden so he could feed them. he had it all planned out here. Well, this is what the Catholic Church and critics, you know, there's critics on everything in the Scripture. And I've read most of it, I think. Of course, there's loopholes in every one of them that I read. And I'd think, no, surely no one would believe that. You know, surely they know the Scriptures better than that, but they don't. But critics say, and the Catholic Church said this. I remember the Pope wrote a letter saying there's controversies in the beginning, in the creation chapter of Genesis. No, it's no controversies if you'll just believe what the Hebrew word actually says. Abel was the teacher, as is shown in chapter 4. By the time this took place right here, we had a pretty great population going. And of course, Abel had a flock following Yahweh. Cain had a flock following Easter goddesses and rabbit slaying eggs and so forth. And they're saying, oh no, we're like the gods, you know. When I die, I'm going to be a god and I'm going to float around in heaven on a cloud. Well, that's the same thing they're teaching today, if you notice. So he planted a garden before. Yahweh planted a garden eastward. The word there means actually before, aforetime, or afore, ever or everlasting. We have examples of that, but that should be enough to get you to know that what has actually took place. And, of course, Abel went on to teach, out of the ground Yahweh made every tree, out of the ground. This means he taught about microorganisms out of the ground. This was a teaching of Abel. How did it get here? And then he taught mankind. We see this teaching throughout the Holy Scriptures, and I remember several sermons that I brought to you showing the creeping things that creep on earth. There was science is finding out about a little of this right now. If I can discover that article, I don't want to waste too much time with it, but if I can find it for you quickly. Here it is. Now, mankind is getting close to this, mainly because we brought it out several years ago and they're checking into it. If you remember, I told you that the trees, the county extension agent gave the great Kohan Benjamin this information that when a tree is not getting the proper food from the soil, it sends out a message. And that message is heard by other creeping things, which comes in and starts destroying what is. So the destroying what is bringing the tree further down, it destroys that, including the fruit that's on it, so the tree can actually survive and maybe get its health back. Now, here's a new one that just came out. Plants talk to each other using underground fungus network. Now, if you think about what goes on in your body and brain, your body is made up of trillions of micro kingdoms. And I brought this out to you months and months ago, maybe years ago. But it's made up of trillions of micro kingdoms inside your body. It has to do with your seeing. There's several kingdoms in your eyeballs here that send messages to your brain and actually send images to your brain. Well, the same thing is taking place here, that they have found that they are communicating with each other. That is the plants that you see growing out of the ground. This was taught in the beginning by Abel. Abel taught for quite some length of time. You wouldn't know it by the way Genesis is written, Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3, 4. But if you combined, as we did before, if you'll just remember, go back and get the tapes, I showed you throughout the Holy Scriptures where Yahweh added to this in both book one and book two, and showed us what Abel actually taught, and that Abel was righteous, as Yahshua actually testified, which means he kept the laws of Yahweh. Righteousness is practicing the laws of Yahweh. He brought an offering of people to Yahweh that was actually suitable to enter into Yahweh's rest. Before the flaming sword, or after the flaming sword was put there, he actually brought these people, and then from his work, thousands of years later, they were still asking at Abel from the work that he had done. And he was teaching this very thing. You'd never know it unless you follow through and see all of his work by the prophets and the apostles. He says here, if you think it's weird that plants can talk to one another, here's something even weirder. One way they talk to one another is via a network of underground fungus. Isn't that beautiful? It's like they have cell phones and they communicate with each other. Many plants have chemical aroma that they deploy when aphids attack with chemicals that both repel the aphid and attract parasites, wasps, and so forth that are aphids' natural predators. So they call in a team to destroy them. It says those unconnected by the network appear not to receive the signal or of attack. Those unconnected by the network appear not to receive the signal of attack and showed no chemical response. So if the telephone line doesn't reach them, if they don't have a cell phone, then they don't get the message. Somewhat the same, but they're getting close to what we will see here. Not today. I'm already way over time. But anyway, the breath. Now it's a divine inspiration. That's a few sermons in itself. But Dave and I are trying to get some answers ourselves because of some of the things that tie in with this that I don't understand yet. In Genesis 3 and verse 22 now, Genesis 3 and verse 22, now, Genesis 3 is where Satan talks Eve into sin. And that's the first seven verses, and it shows that that she sinned, and they put it naked. They knew that they were naked. Well, the Hebrew word there showed that that word actually means sin in verse 7. But 3 through 7 shows that she talked him into wanting to be like the gods and follow a practice of sin. So, in verse 22 now, 3 and verse 22, he says, "Then Yahweh said, behold, the man now has become like one who has begun to know righteousness and evil. And now he must not be allowed to put out his hand and also take of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, Yahweh sent him out of the garden." Garden. This word here, according to Strong's Exhaustive Concordance, the word garden means garden or protected place. Out of the house of Yahweh, the protected place. Protected place. Now, verse 24. "So he drove out man, and he placed cherubim at the east of the garden of Eden, and a flaming sword." Here's more sermons, but just take it for what it says right now. "Flaming sword, which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life." So Yahweh put man on trial and said, "Now you've got to prove yourself to me before you'll ever get into my kingdom or ever enter my rest." His rest being, of course, if you put I'll jump ahead just a little bit. Isaiah 2:2, which shows, "In the last days I will establish my house. It will bring perfect peace to the earth." There won't be any stopping it. It's going to bring perfect peace. Praise Yahweh. And then a kingdom is going to be set up that will guard and keep. That will guard and keep. That was the message that he told Adam. He set him in the garden to guard and keep this. Don't let it change. Well, Adam was, he wasn't deceived, but he was tempted into going to see Grandmama, going to see Aunt Jo, Aunt Josephine, whoever it was he was going to see. And of course, he fell into sin. Whatever sin it was, sin is sin. He should have kept his mind on the garden, guarding and keeping it, instead of going and visiting kinfolks. You need to do this, brethren. You need to buckle down and get to studying every minute you possibly can. Either study the books of Israel, the book of Yahweh, listen to the sermons. In fact, you can listen to the sermons now in one ear if you can train yourself to do that and read. And read, you know, you can do two things at once. You can study both ways here. You can listen to the sermons on the one hand and read on the other. Don't waste your time. Keep building your mind. It's going to be worth it here in just a few days now. You're going to see all of this break loose, and we're going to receive this great gift if you're ready. If you're not ready, you're going to get left out. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next leader. I love you! Ha ha ha!